All right, folks, welcome to Growing Up in America on KPFT Houston Pacifica Radio with our host, President and CEO of the Houston Food Bank, Brian Green, and from Children at Risk policy expert, Mandy Kimball. What do we have on tap today, Mandy and Brian?
Hello, hello. Happy Monday. Thanks, Don. And today we have Brian Green of the Houston Food Bank standing in for Dr. Sanborn. How are you doing today, Brian?
Well, I'm very happy to be here. Thanks for asking, Mandy. It's so another exciting. Beautiful summer day in Houston.
Yeah, and you're not just standing in for Bob.
I'm sitting.
You're sitting. Well, we love having you here. It is a beautiful, warm day. And then we are also honored to have Dr. Claire Bikini, a local pediatrician, favorite pediatrician. Thanks for joining us today, Claire. And today is an exciting day. That's right. It's pledge drive here at KPFT, so you know what that means. It's time to pick up the phone and pledge your support for KPFT Community Radio by dialing in 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738, or donate online at KPFT. We want to hear from you, and of course, we would love your support for Growing Up in America.
And while you're getting that phone numbers in so that you can make your pledge, we do want to start off today's show with the Children at Risk Assistant Director of the Center for Social Measurement and Evaluation, Claire Tracy, about the significance of the number 26.
26.
26. That was a happy age. I remember that.
It was a happy age. But what could it really mean? Stay tuned and find out. And after Date Ahead, we'll be talking to Miriam Camiro of Ruiz, Texas, to talk about the struggles families face once they're released from an immigrant detention center and are awaiting their case. This is a real issue.
Wow.
And it keeps going on, huh?
That one is a shame. Today on our social conscience scale, we want you, you can't call in today because the phone lines are going to be tied in because everybody's going to be making their pledges today, but you still can think your opinion and we'll hear you. Thumbs up, thumbs down, the segment. And the question today is, should children be allowed to sleep in during the summer? My children are not allowed to phone in today. can I sleep in during the summer? That'd be good. So anyway, you can't call in, but we're going to be asking some of the people in the studio here, the volunteers who are taking pledges. We'll get their opinions on this. Should children be allowed to sleep in during the summer?
That's right. And you know what? If you call in to pledge, please feel free to voice your opinion.
That's true.
There
you can put that in there.
Yeah.
And if your pledge is high, we might even count your vote.
There we go. And our final guest today, along with Dr. Claire Bikini, we have several residents in the room today, but on the radio it's going to be Nicholas Holly and Abhishek Dar, and they are local pediatrician residents, and they're going to be discussing the use of long-acting reversible forms of birth control by minors. So that'll be an interesting discussion, talking about the facts.
That will be probably more controversial than our conversation about sleeping in during the summer, I'm betting.
There we go. Maybe so. I don't know. People have strong feelings, actually, about both, right? Welcome to Growing Up in America on KPFT Houston Pacifica Radio, a discussion on our children, public policy, politics, and our future. And how do we, as a nation, do when it comes to taking care of all of our kids? Today, we have the fantastic, respected Brian Green from the Houston Food Bank.
And please join us every week, of course, as we fill in the same 50 minutes with lively discussion on the status of children in America from experts on the quality of life for America's children. I'm Brian.
And I'm Mandy Kimball. And this is going to be a fantastic show. And let's start off with how important it is for people to call in right now, this hour, and pledge to KPFT, specifically Growing Up in America, 713-526-5738. This is an important opportunity and an important time to call in and give your support. This is an a station, and particularly Growing Up in America, is a show that discusses timely topics about our children. What is going on within our schools? How can we do a better job as a community and parents supporting our children, our future workforce? What are politicians saying? What are the policies being made? Giving a voice to children and really discussing what's going on the ground.
And not only that, but I didn't know about this. There's all these great music packages that you can get in along with your gift. Certainly Rob Zombie and Marilyn Manson, very appropriate for our show about growing up in America. Some bands that I remember just would love to go see. The Offspring, The Verve Pipe. Don't know who the Cocoa Monkeys are.
I'm sure they're great.
I see Marshall Ball here, Blues Traveler. My goodness. I mean, so many great shows that you can get tickets to. There's plenty of pairs of tickets that you can get. A whole big set of them. I don't know if they're available on the web, but make a gift. Go see some music. Live music is one. And you know what else is fun? Data.
That's right. We have Claire Tracy, Assistant Director at the Center for Social Measurement and Evaluation. How are you doing today, Claire?
I'm doing pretty good.
Thanks for joining us. So the number 26.
Yes.
Brian said it was a fun
My time. Guess is 26 is the number of Marilyn Manson concerts that she's been to. Is that it?
Nope, not at all.
All right. So explain it to us. What is 26?
Yeah, so 26 is actually 26%. And so that is the percentage of school districts who took a recent Children at Risk online survey and designated that they did not have a recess policy in their schools that prohibited the schools from taking school recess away for punishment or discipline reasons. That is a mouthful, but that is what 26% is.
So a quarter of districts across the state? Is this in Texas? And they're not huge fans of recess? Is that what we're hearing?
Or that maybe it's not that they're not huge fans, but they're it's difficult for them to prioritize it for whatever reason in their district.
See, that was very nice of you to say. There we go. They're not prioritizing recess. So why should, Brian, why should districts care about recess?
Well, I'm trying to figure out just to what extent is this a proactive versus, well, it's assumed that they're not going to take away recess anyway. I'm not quite sure. Do we have any understanding of what that means?
Yes. So basically what it means is that, or what we kind of have learned through the survey is that just overall, that there's sort of this kind of lack of understanding about just what's going on with recess. And so I think it's more the first point that you were making, that I think it's just them assuming that it's not going to happen. But what we're realizing is that it in fact is happening across the state, where students are losing recess because they have to make up homework or for punishment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And since we've got our resident pediatricians here, and I think the reason why they call you guys residents is because you spend so much time there, isn't that? Or something like that. The importance of free play time. What does that mean? What do we get? What happens when we lose that?
I think, hello, my name is Dr. Nick Hawley right here. So I think that the importance of recess for children is that when you're going through 6-8 hour days of schoolwork, it gets tiring, and it gets difficult to pay attention, as we all remember, towards the end of the day. And I think that having recess or some free time in the middle of the day, especially after lunch, is really helpful in terms of keeping their attention later in the day and giving them a chance to relax.
And then I think, you know, this is such a big issue for us. I mean, we really took this to the state. I mean, you guys led the way, but we really tried to support your efforts to try to make sure all schools think about making sure the kids have access to recess. Because data show that kids who don't have recess, you know, they aren't as healthy. They have more, you know, more issues with obesity and a lot of other health-related issues. They also have problems with mental health. It's a great, you know, release, and it's important for social and emotional development to have unstructured playtime. And unfortunately, we're seeing that more kids who are, especially at low-income schools, schools that don't have as many resources, are getting recess taken away. And when it's so important for brain development and for you to do well in school and have better attention span, it's just really a shame that, the kids who struggle with behavior or academic achievement get recess taken away. It's so, you know, it's the wrong thing for the kids.
I know, and Dr. Bikini can talk a lot about this, and I appreciate it when she does, because I think we can all agree that recess is important for every child. And I think what is especially devastating, Claire, to your point, is when you really start digging in to the data and how is it playing out, it's those school districts who are underperforming, that have a high percentage of children living in low-income families who don't have access to safe environments after school and really need that unstructured play and a break during the day so that they can be healthy and pay attention in class, but also that social and emotional learning is so very important.
Totally agree. I'm really glad you guys are doing this survey. I think I testified on behalf of this bill last session, and I'm ready to do it again, and more data is good.
So that's why the why a district-wide policy is so important then, because otherwise, I mean, that principal, they're trying to get their test scores up. What are they going to prioritize? Well, that may not be
drill
society's
and kill.
Order.
Yeah, that's right. No, that's exactly, which isn't, there's a lot of pressure, right? But the data shows that it's not very beneficial. Claire, do you have anything else to state about the survey or what you're seeing across the state?
Other Claire.
No, I think these were all great points made, and I think that y'all covered most of them. I think another thing kind of that you guys kind of touched on is that it is just unfortunate that I think where we're seeing recess being taken away the most is in the school districts where kids probably need it the most. And that was a trend that we found through this recent study that we just put out, is that the lower performing districts were more often the ones that did not have policies and more often the ones where kids need to, you know, be protected and they need to have that time. So
this may actually be something more not at the district level, but has to be solved at the state level, because I'm thinking about the district itself, where if you've got even one school that stays underperforming, then your whole district can be wiped out. So just as an individual principal has the incentive to drill and kill,
right?
Instead of allowing a recess, the district
right.
Doesn't want to stop them,
right?
Because that one school can sink the district,
right? No, absolutely, which is why it's a challenge in Austin. So this is, I mean, there was legislation last session that we were trying to get through, and I think there are a couple of things. One, the legislature doesn't realize that kids don't have recess, and when you're looking at the body of the legislature, which are older, let's throw it out there, mostly, they had a couple of recesses a day, and for them to comprehend that there's some kids that are not getting recess at all was shocking to them, and I think they had to figure it out. So we're definitely going back. But yeah, I think that TEA, Texas Education Agency, and the legislature, I mean, it's crazy. We should prioritize recess. I mean, it's...
So is this something where there is opposition, or is just lack of awareness the enemy?
Well, the opposition piece of it is local control and local flexibility, and their argument was principals and superintendents know best what's going on. But the bigger picture is that there's a lot of pressure being
right.
put onto those. And so do they really have a choice?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. All right, so local control, but within constraints of how you've incentivized things makes a big difference.
That's exactly. Thank you so much, Claire Tracy, Assistant Director at the Center for Social Measurement and Evaluation. If people want to read more about the study that you just released, where can they find it?
They can find it on the homepage of our website. So if you just go to childrenatrisk.org, it's the very first thing that will pop up, and you can just click on it, and you can download the full report.
Great. Thank you. Take care.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Well, that was a pretty good intro that kind of gives an idea of the things that we're working on that matter a lot. And you can help support that with your pledge to KPFT. 713-526-5738. Certainly happy to get lots of different size pledges. But if you do give, at least I think we got $120 starts to get you some of the neat ticket packages. The English Beat, American Aquarium. Mike Zito Band, Max Stalling, Mickey and the Motor Cars,
Mickey and the Motor Cars. That's right. Let's check out Pledge Central. We have Dwayne Bradley with us today. How are you, Dwayne?
Hey, Mandy, Brian. Hey, how y'all doing?
Fantastic.
I am fine out here. The Pledge Pit is populated with wonderful folks, and we are ready to take calls at 713-526-5738, 526-KPFT, JAM-KPFT, 713-526-5738. And, yeah, we can take you through the transformation process from listener, which you obviously already are because you're listening, to a listener sponsor, a member of KPFT. We need you. We're asking for that help. Anything that you can share means a lot. And if you got a lot, share a lot. If you have a little, share a little. Just do your fair share. Visa, Discover, American Express, MasterCard, cash, check, money order, electronic funds transfer, credit, debit, you name it. Give us a call. We can do it all from there. But you got to let us know that you're there, that you care, and you have something to share that you're willing to spare to keep this great show on the air because it's only fair. 713-526-5738. We've got the ticket packages. We have CDs. We have books. We have DVDs, T-shirts, tote bags, mugs, all that kind of swag, all that merchandise if you want that. But the best thing, we have a commercial-free radio station blowing 100,000 watts of freedom out across the Upper Texas Gulf Coast, powered by the people almost 50 years now, and it's yours. 713-526-5738, 526-KPFT. We have a goal on this program. We have to raise $500 by 4 o'clock for Growing Up in America.
We can do it.
Help us out, folks.
That's right. Absolutely. And Growing Up in America allows a lot of opportunities, as I was mentioning earlier. One of them, Brian, I'm so glad that you are here today. When we talk about food, when we talk about food security and security, when we talk about disasters, the Houston Food Bank is there for the greater Houston area and really a leader across the nation. But to be able to have you come onto the radio and talk about what is going on, where parents and families can access these programs or the opportunities at their school are really important. And you're always there talking.
Thank you, Manny. That's very kind. But it's always such a pleasure to be on the show. Yeah. I get to learn things that I didn't know before walking in here. And, of course, being hanging out with smart people, hanging out with the doctors here today makes it extra fun. But I do want to point out, I'll do a $200 challenge grant. That's a small one, but hey, throw that out there. You donate before four o'clock, up to $200, I'll match it.
That's good.
So the first person to do that.
Yeah, that'll almost get us to the goal. If we get one call at 200, we get your 200. Brian, we get $200 pledges, we still get it. We get 450s, we still get it. So, folks, whatever you can do, do it now, please. 713-526-5738.
Fantastic. Thanks, Dwayne. Mm-hmm. And we will be checking in with you in just a few minutes.
Well, and I hope I have some names of some wonderful folks to share with you when you do.
Well, Dwayne, I hope you have some names as well. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. So up next, we have Miriam Camaro. And Miriam is the case manager for Ruiz's, Texas. In Houston. Miriam, how are you doing today?
Hi, I'm doing great.
Great. Thanks for joining us today. Now, did I say it correctly?
Almost. To say it in English tone, you could say raíces, and then in Spanish it would be raíces, which means root in Spanish. And that raíces stands for the Refugee and Education Center for Refugee and Immigrant Center for Education and Legal Services.
Very good. Well, Miriam, what are you working on these days?
Oh, goodness. It has been quite an exciting time professionally, but it is also a very tragic time for what is going on with immigration nowadays. So the reason we decided to have a case manager position open in Houston was because we noticed that a lot of families were coming, once they were released from detention centers, to Houston. And so as we all know, Houston is a very large city, and to be able to integrate and navigate the city isn't quite easy, especially for someone who is new to the country. So what I have been doing is trying to link them with community resources, help accompaniment at any given point, and just try to help them be prepared for if anything unforeseeable happens, whether it be deportations or how they can get access to legal representation for them.
And so, and right now, there's a lot going on, right, which was probably the urgency to have you in Houston. Can you talk a little bit about what the families are going through in regards to reunification and really the status of that? I know that there were goals. Clearly, we're not making the goals in regards to reuniting families, but what do you predict will continue to happen?
So I think right now families more than anything just feel uncertain about what is happening. Although there have been deadlines and goals, it seems to me that it has lagged a little bit. A lot of detention centers people are being transferred from one detention center to another detention center. So that in and of itself, I'm sure, raises confusion for them. Children obviously are very affected by this, and they definitely already feel uncertain in and of themselves. So it seems to me that it is just absolutely daunting for the family to begin with, and it's something that we hope that every child gets reunited with their parents. And a lot of legal effects have also been happening. Thankfully, a federal judge did say that they are blocked from deporting anybody who was separated from their family today. But what we had seen beforehand was what I like to call forced deportations, and I mean that by parent would be deported, and then child would have to face the responsibility or the decision to either stay and try their case or be deported with parent. And so child always kind of followed the lead of the parent and would often feel discouraged enough to be able to come and navigate a city and a country by themselves. And I think that was something that is probably one of the saddest things that we have also seen, especially considering the fact of just maybe they have a viable claim to be able to be here and seek asylum here, and yet they feel the need that they can't because parent can't come with them.
That's heartbreaking. And
absolutely,
what a lot of pressure to put on a child to be able to make those decisions. So what is the game plan now? And I was reading that a lot of the families that they were trying to reunify are saying that they are not eligible. And so what, nearly half of the kids under 5 can't be reunited with their children. What are the conversations for the future of those kids?
I think right now it seems to me the federal government is really is in crisis management because they didn't quite foresee what this would look like. So it seemed like they implemented the policy before seeing how this would be carried out, or they thought it was just never going to be really that outrageous, right? And so as of right now, the deadline for all children is July 26th. Whether that happens or not, I'm not quite hopeful, and that's really sad to have that. But truthfully, it's been changing day by day with things that they're doing and how they're managing what detention centers are, because currently right now there's reunification centers that are technically detention centers, but they're shifting people between other detention centers so they can then get reunified with a child. It is such a complicated and overburdened process that we're not quite sure if they're going to then be like, well, let's go back to another plan and let's go and try to shift and go back to another way, which is really hard for us as practitioners and attorneys to be able to really kind of create a game plan when we're trying to help see, and the federal government in and of itself is making their own game plan as well.
Yeah, that's hard. Now, can you talk a little bit about your family reunification project? And then I also know that there is a Canopy, a post-release volunteer program. I know that there are a lot of folks in the community who are watching this closely and want to help and don't know how.
Absolutely. So what we're trying to do is we got such a huge response and truthfully we're incredibly grateful for how many members of the community, both in Houston, Texas, and all around the country, who want to help out. And it seems to me that this is a great time and opportunity to be able to link volunteers to a family in need within their own community. And so it looks a little different when diocese is in a city where a volunteer wants to do, and we're currently located in Corpus, San Antonio, Austin, Dallas, Fort Worth, and Houston. But when you're not in one of those, what we're trying to do is link partnership or essentially collaborate with other immigrant legal service providers or just nonprofits in their communities outside of the Texas and help them and feed them volunteers that have expressed interest through diocese to them so they can better assist and screen, train, and help connect them to a family. And so if anyone is interested in signing up for this, you can go ahead and email Canopy at RAICES, which is RAICES, Texas.org. So Canopy at RAICES, Texas.org. And from there, we can really essentially kind of get that gear going. But I will say with caution that volunteer opportunities, it isn't quite the same as what it looks like in any other type of a volunteer event. Usually volunteer events go between 3 and 6 on every Tuesday, or there's a consistent time commitment that I can tell you. With this, unfortunately, since every family is a case-by-case basis and there is presenting problems that look every differently what from people that are trying to integrate into Alabama as opposed to California, we try to caution that if you are seeking a volunteer, trust me when I say that you are going to make such an impactful experience for this family, but it is, please be patient until we can, until the family has expressed an issue that you can help them out with in your community.
Now, does RAICES collaborate with the refugee service programs like Catholic Charities or Interfaith Ministries? How does that all work?
Yes. So with the Family Detention Program, we are part of CARA, and we're that R in the CARA for that, and Catholic Charities is part of it. We do have a refugee resettlement program here, and it is currently in San Antonio. And so it's we're slowly but surely trying to cover all the aspects.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for everything that you're doing, and I know that people really appreciate it. It's an issue that we're going to be talking about for a while, and so we'd love for you to be on the show again and give us an update, if that's okay.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. And more importantly, thank you for giving us the opportunity to really spread out our opportunities, events, and also, more importantly, our clients' voices that can't really advocate for themselves.
That's right. If people wanted to find out more about RAICES, how do they do it?
You can visit our website at RAICESTexas.org, or you can go see us on our social media, Twitter, handle at RAICESTexas. And RAICES is spelled R-A-I-C-E-S.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Miriam.
Thank you so much for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So, since we've got our KPFT resident physicians, our pediatricians in the house, what do you have to say about what you're watching with kids in the recent immigrant community?
I'll say personally, I agree with the AAP, the American Academy of Pediatrics, has said on the topic, which is that kids should be free and with their parents. And we know that anything else is bad for both their mental and physical health. And we've seen this with many studies in the past, that any traumatic experience, as like being detained alone, being separated from your parents, or seeing your parents detained in prison, has long-term mental and physical health consequences, ranging from depression, anxiety, PTSD, and even as they grow up, they're at higher risk for things like heart disease, and heart attacks, and diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol. We're at this point exposing them to those traumatic experiences that we know from experience will be bad for them going forward. So I think I agree with the AAP that they should be outside of detention centers and with their families.
Yeah. I know, Dr. Bikini, with the immigration policy discussion, it has a lot of people on alert. Have you seen a decline at all of families coming in or concerned seeking help?
Yeah, in fact, we've been very worried about that across our community. And through my work with Doctors for Change, which is a local nonprofit, this has been something that we've been tracking very closely. And that's part of why some of our policy work for the next legislative session will really emphasize the need for keeping hospitals and clinics as safe spaces. Actually, we had a forum about this last week. We really want to see, everybody have access to healthcare, but everybody, regardless of your immigration status, to be able to be comfortable seeking care, for kids and adults. We think that's really important, and so that's part of what we're working on for next legislative session.
I don't know if you've seen that, the proposed change in administrative policy from the Trump administration to change the definition of public charge.
Public charge is the conversation right now.
Rather significantly. Now, I assume that does not include any health care, does it?
I don't know.
I don't. I know it has to do with food, right? And education. I'm sure that it touches on the health. I don't
education
know.
Education was one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Which and then that we are seeing that phenomenon of people backing off and not wanting to access help for fear that they could be labeled a public charge, because theoretically this could be retroactive. Yeah. And it would apply to anyone in the household. So where you have these many blended households, I mean, mm-hmm. it literally be, the dad, well, he never received SNAP. But there was one of the children who was SNAP eligible and did. And well, guess what? He gets labeled a public charge. If this goes through, and it's purely if the administration chooses to do it. It will not require legislation, and that's what I think is really scaring a lot of people right now.
Oh, I'm definitely seeing a lot of patients who are scared to, sign up for WIC or access SNAP or WIC benefits. It's really very troubling, and as a healthcare provider, we want to encourage our patients to utilize these resources. But at the same time, I can't begin to know the type of stress that this causes.
Yeah, and even we're finding debate with the service providers, where because we can't guarantee
exactly
that the rule won't be changed,
right.
And so while say WIC it was like, okay, here we have an infant. Do we want to make sure that this infant is getting good nutrition? Yes, we absolutely positively do.
Mm-hmm.
Could it then be turned around and used as a weapon against that family? I can't guarantee that won't happen.
That's a hard conversation to have with families.
Yeah.
Very hard.
That is. All right. So, reminder, Pledge Week right now is the opportunity for our listeners to call in and pledge your support for Growing Up in America and KPFT at 713-526-5738. Please help us meet our goal. Please support the program that you listen to every Monday from 3 to 4. And learn about all things that relate to children. And if that has to do with education, if that has to do with immigration, health, parenting, human trafficking, food insecurity, nutrition, physical activity, how can we support our kids? This is where you come to find out that information. And we need your support to make it happen. 713-526-5738. And let's go to Pledge Central and check out.
Yeah,
with Dwayne.
Hey, well, we're out here and we're listening to the show, and it's another excellent program from you folks there at Children at Risk and the Dr. Bob fill-in guest co-host, Mr. Brian Green. So we're happy you're here, but, unfortunately, we still have that $500 staring at us saying, we need you. And that $500... We also have a goal of getting at least 3 pledges during this hour, and right now we have 0. And we have that $200 challenge from Brian that will go unclaimed unless somebody, as wonderful as you, dear friend, out there listening right now, call in and help us take advantage of his generosity. 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. just let us know that you've got a little bit you want to share. It could be $5 or $10 a month. It could be $5 or $10 just once. It could be an instant pledge of $50 or $100. Visa, Discover, American Express, and MasterCard make it quick, easy, and painless. Just drop it on that fantastic plastic and we'll take care of it. You can do it as an installment over as many months as you wish, between 1 and 12, whatever the numbers. We will do the math and figure it out for you. Just let us know that you're there and that you care. 713-526-5738, 526-KPFT. This is a really great program, and it's been on how many years now, Mandy? Have you and Dr. Bob and all of your associates from Growing Up in the Children at Risk group, how long have you been doing this program?
9 years.
9 years, okay.
Right.
And over that period of time, how much positive feedback have you garnered just about this program, on top of all the great work you do with the school ratings and all of the work related to human trafficking and everything else that Children at Risk gets involved in, and all the advocacy and the legislative work and all of that?
Yeah, I think it's extremely valuable, right? Conversations with community folks, with public officials, really value the information that is shared, and this is a great opportunity, our vessel, to be able to get the word out so that we know what's going on with kids.
Yeah. I think it's really important, and I know that some of you might be listening to this on an archive, because it does archive and it's podcastable for the next 2 months. And if you are listening to the archived edition of this, know that KPFT and Growing Up in America's need for financial sustenance never ceases. The power is always running at KPFT. And the need to grow this community and to have this wonderful radio resource reach more people and impact more lives in a positive way is always important. So whenever you're listening, wherever you're listening, whoever you are listening with, know that each of you make a difference through KPFT's ability and Growing Up in America's ability to reach lives, to change lives, and to make a positive difference in our community. So please help us any way you can. 713-526-5738, 526-KPFT.
And Dwayne, may I ask, in the past, I've always done my donations after you talk about how you can text and give your donations. Do you have that set up this time, too?
They don't have the text to donate feature running anymore.
No problem.
Yeah.
I'll do it the
old way.
Just
go online.
That's right.
OnlineKPFT.org.
Perfect.
There's a donate tab right there, and it's quick, easy, and painless right there for you, Doc.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Oh, yay. Yeah. We got phone call.
We have our intern out here taking her first call.
And I'll definitely contribute my usual $200 towards the Growing Up in America numbers, too.
Well, that can possibly be leveraged with Dr. Yours, with Brian's, to almost get us to the goal.
So
that's a positive step forward here with a little over 20 minutes remaining in this first of, remember, only two times are we going to be doing this summer. So it's important that we reach the goal, both of the editions that we have. 713-526-5738. Thanks for that.
Oh, Herbie Holland Hancock means that it is time for our social conscience scale. For those of you who are socially conscious, you need to be answering this question in your mind, or if you make a pledge,
we'll take
your answer that way,
there
too.
There you go.
All right, so we've got a great question today, and the question is, should children be allowed to sleep in during the summer? Now, I'm not quite sure what the background of this particular highly controversial topic is.
I think it's all about schedule, right? Children are used to being on a schedule, a routine, and the summer, it gets a little bit crazy. Are they staying up too late, sleeping in one day, not so much the next? Is that okay?
Wow. I mean, so here I am as an expert pediatrician myself, in my dreams. One of the things that
the food guy,
the pediatricians do tell me is that school is on the wrong damn schedule anyway, especially for older kids.
So
maybe at least if during the summer the kids get on their, what is it, circadian rhythm? What is it? The something rhythm. At least in the summer.
Circadian, yeah, you got it.
Yeah.
It's okay. I was thinking of the cicadas.
Mm-hmm.
They get on that rhythm where every 7 years they go out like crazy. But anyway, at least during the summer they get that right. So I would say, yes, let those little buggers sleep in.
Let those buggers sleep in. Buggers. That's hard. So what's interesting is it sounds great. I still think that a routine means something. I don't know, but so is a break, right? Our whole life is structured around a routine. Sometimes you just need a little break. But I don't think this really applies to everyone because I still go to work in the morning. I don't know. So if you have someone staying at home or watching them, but at the same time, and I'll be honest, it's called the summer struggle juggle, right? Like, where are you going this week? And I still have my schedule. And
you so sound jealous, Mandy.
No, just a little bit, but that's okay. But to still keep them on a routine is what we have to do. Now, what's hard is, do you let them stay up later knowing they still have to wake up at the same time so you can go to work?
Well, then that would be a definite no. If you can't let them sleep, then for goodness sakes, don't let them stay up.
That's right.
So are you thumbs up or thumbs down? I don't...
Let the kids sleep in. I'm thumbs up.
You're thumbs up.
Yeah,
okay.
All right. I'm sad.
All right.
But does that mean that there's no schedule? Should you keep them on a routine? Let's have our resident pediatricians. What's healthy for them?
I'm thumbs up.
Thumbs up?
Firmly thumbs up. I think that, like you said, summer is a break, but with the one caveat that some kids, like you said, who have behavioral or developmental issues need a very regimented schedule to keep their behavior okay, to keep their mindset at base. I think for those kids who you know need a very regimented schedule, should keep the same schedule during the year in the summer, but I think for most kids, sleeping is fine.
Wait a minute. You mean there are children who don't have behavioral issues?
Yeah, there are a few. There are a few.
I don't believe it.
I'm also thumbs up on sleeping in. My only caveat to that is that I feel like there should be some amount of routine at some point during the day. And they've done studies on this where they found kids who are in better off families and kids who are in lower socioeconomic status families, they during the school years, their academic performance kind of lines up pretty well. But summer is where it diverges oftentimes because the people who are better off have time and the resources to give their kids some sort of enrichment activity over the summer, whereas people who are more struggling to make it, they have to go work all day and to keep things going by. So if there's some sort of routine, something to keep challenging them mentally so they don't just forget about everything over the summer, that'd be good. But in terms of specifically sleeping in.
Yeah, so you're bringing a different issue, the summer slide.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And where do these kids go? Yeah. And there's oftentimes those families who can financially afford it send their kids to camp and they go on vacation and they do X, Y, and Z. And other people oftentimes, well, I still have to go to work. It's not necessarily safe or you don't really have any go. And so it's the, what is it called? Lock and key? Is that what it's called?
Latchkey.
Yeah. Thank you. Let's see. But there's a lock and a key there. So latchkey kids who have to stay home and there's not a lot of enrichment to help them afford. Very interesting. Dr. Bikini?
Yeah, actually, I mean, I agree with everything that people are saying. I'm okay with a more relaxed schedule over the summer, but I do think having some schedule is really important. I want kids to get enough sleep. I want them to still, you know, eat properly, to get some exercise, to have some of these enriching experiences. So maybe I'm thumbs down if you think of sleeping in as sleeping all day and staying up all night, but I am definitely pro a more relaxed schedule. And I definitely loved sleeping in over the summer, so I'm being a little bit
sometimes you just need it.
Yeah,
my problem is
that's
my kids
true.
Will want to stay up late, but one of them doesn't know how to sleep in because their body is still on that time. Mm-hmm. I don't know, he's got an internal clock. It's not good. But
if you get, you know, it's kind of like when you really change time zones dramatically, it may take you a few days.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But what if you let go for a few days and see what happens? And maybe they basically, you know, go to bed at 2 o'clock in the morning and wake up at noon.
Yeah, that's not okay. That's what these high schoolers are doing, right? When their parents go to work.
that's tricky.
All right, so we have thumbs up to sleeping in, kind of.
Anything? How about from our Pledge Studio?
Yeah, did they get Pledge Central.
I'm pro sleeping in.
There we go.
I think that, you know, we need to let the brain develop. Now, I'm not a big fan of letting the midnight oil be burned too often. just because it's summer and you don't have to get up, meaning that you can stay up and jam on some, you know, games on the interweb all night. That's not cool.
Yeah, that's what they desire. Thanks, Dwayne. Mm-hmm. All righty. So that was good. Well, everyone pretty much agrees. Everyone wants to sleep in. How can you be against it? I don't know.
Has there been any, like, the point about the Dwayne made about the video games where, you know, electronics keep you awake.
Yes,
it's like how
definitely.
Much kids will stay up if they're mm-hmm. doing electronics that's versus kind of if they're light. Reading or whatever. Yeah, mm-hmm.
yeah. In fact, for a lot of kids who have trouble going to sleep, we try to recommend that they actually turn off all of their media and devices, at a decent hour so that their brain can be ready for them to go to bed. But absolutely, there are data to show that.
Very unpopular data with my children, I'm sure that would be. Yes.
Yes.
You can do it. All right. So now we are at our final segment. One of our favorites, listeners absolutely love, an opportunity to hear from the pediatric residents. And today we have, you've already heard from them, Nicholas Holly and Abhishek Dar. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
I know that we were wanting to talk about larks, and we can talk a little bit more about that. But it is kind of the mid of summer right now, and it is hot, and parents love to hear updates on what they should be doing or thinking about in regards to children's health. Do y'all have any summer tips you would like to share?
So some summer tips that we would like to share. Number one, don't leave your children in hot cars.
That is bad.
Mm-hmm. Not even for like, I'm just going to run inside 30 seconds, because then you forget that they're in there and you stay inside and watch TV and do all those bad things. So never leave your kids in the car. Always take them with you. And then car seat safety. Always continue the same things. Kids under two need to be in a rear-facing car seat, no matter how uncomfortable they are for your 18-hour road trip. They need to be in the car seat, in the back seat, rear-facing for the entirety of the trip.
That's hard. I know when we do long trips, one of mine is still in a booster, right? And so it's the strap. And I mean, to sit up, car seats kind of make you stay there. Now, mm-hmm. baby might cry because they're tired of being in there. But those kids get lazy in the back seat, and they're this way and they're that way. And it just scares me. I'm like, please do not get decapitated. Like, the seatbelt has to be.
But I thought that the booster was very different than the car seat in that the efficacy of the safety of the booster is more questionable.
What, doesn't it boost you up so that the seatbelt hits you properly?
Correct.
What are you questioning?
No,
he needs to be educated. Let's go on.
I don't know if I need to be. But I was just reading about that or some time ago that. So it's basically the data on whether or not the children actually have a lower injury rate wearing booster seats is reversed, that they actually have a higher injury rate with a booster seat than not, is what I had read. Now, I'm staring at three pediatricians, and they're all going, what the hell are you talking about? But I swear I read that.
I am not. That is actually true. The data is much better on the car seats themselves than the booster seats. The booster seats are more equivocal. So as pediatricians, we are very gung-ho about car seats. Everybody up to the age of two and even past the age of two, if they can fit in it, needs to be in a rear-facing car seat in a back seat until they grow out of it. Booster seats, I'm not actually sure about the data about it being worse than not having having anything at all. But yeah, I do know that the data is not nearly as convincing as it is for car seats.
So my son is 6 years old and he's still in a booster seat, and I keep him in the booster seat because if he's not, he clearly can't fit in the car seat, right? Little one. So he's right. In the booster seat. And if he's not in the booster seat, then the seatbelt will be right there on your neck, you know? So then it gets him higher. Okay. We're going to have to do some more research on this.
We're going to tweet out the AAP recommendations a little bit later for everybody.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Because they have some, they still recommend that school-age children wear booster or are in booster seats.
Wait a minute. Is that through high school?
That is school-age children. Older children have to wear their seatbelts and should not be in the front seat until they're over 13 because of the airbags.
Airbag.
Mm-hmm. But yes, I mean, the data for children up to two, and you're exactly right. I think my nephew was in his rear-facing car seat until he was almost four because he's still fit. The data are overwhelmingly, overwhelmingly they show that you are much more likely to survive and have fewer injuries in a car accident if you're in the rear-facing car seat. But the American Academy of Pediatrics still recommends that school-age children should be in booster seats. And I'll have to send this out. And
yes, thank
also
you.
Also see what I can find for Brian and see if we can answer that question.
There we go. Thank you very much. Thanks, Brian.
Oh,
for
sure. Sorry for the distraction. Keep
for
going.
For questioning what I'm doing. Is right or wrong. All righty.
For $20, I won't tell your six-year-old this.
Yeah. So today, y'all presented a topic that y'all wanted to talk about, which is LARC. Can someone please explain that? Abhishek?
So a LARC is L-A-R-C. It stands for Long-Acting Reversible Contraception. And it is sort of different from the traditional contraception birth control that you think of with either the pill or condoms, in that it's more of a set it and forget it type thing. So it's a one-time procedure, and then you don't have to worry about it for 3 to 5 and up to 10 years, depending on the type that you choose. There's a couple of different types. There's IUDs, which are intrauterine devices. And those are devices that go directly into the uterus through the cervix, and that requires, obviously, a pelvic exam and be done in clinic. The other kind is an implant that goes in your arm. It's directly under the skin, and that can also be done in clinic in a couple of minutes. And like I said, the good thing about both of those types is you get it done one time, and then you are... you have birth control for the next somewhere between 3 to 10 years, depending on which specific type you choose. And you don't have to remember something every day.
So this is a children's radio show, talk show, right? And so and it's a controversial topic, right? For many different reasons. And why was this a particular issue that you wanted to discuss on the show? Is this something that children are talking about, or information that you're trying to get to parents? Is there any impact on children if they do this?
So it's something children basically from their teenage years on definitely are dealing with. And if anybody remembers high school, it's definitely not something that kids aren't thinking about talking about, regardless of whether us as adults are talking about it. So as pediatricians, the best thing we can do is equip them with the right knowledge to make the right decisions. And LARCs, especially in adolescence, people who are tend to be more impulsive, more forgetful, something that you can put in one time and forget about it will be more effective than remembering to take a pill at the same time every single day for a long period of time.
Wait a minute. You just said forgetful and impulsive. I don't know if I know any tea dinners like that.
I think this is actually a really important topic for Texas. And as we get into the next legislative session, you know, we talk about access to contraception, and it's very different here in Texas compared with other states. And so I think that's one reason.
Because you can't really talk about it.
Yeah, right. But I think that's one reason why, our resident pediatricians brought this up. And I want... if you don't mind me asking, if you could kind of summarize, I mean, Texas still has one of the higher rates of teen pregnancy. We still have the highest rate of repeat teen mm-hmm. pregnancies. And so what can Texas do to better use LARCs? What are other states doing that we're not doing?
So Texas is like Dr. Burkini was mentioning, has one of the worst rates of teen pregnancy and repeat pregnancies. And the current policy for Texas for contraception is that in order to get any prescription contraception under the age of 18, you have to have parental consent. And really, Texas and Utah are the only two states in the country that require that. Brandon, it looked like
you. Yeah. I was just like, even that one shocked me.
Yeah. And basically what we've seen, and from a lot of different studies, is that if kids have to talk to their parents to get their hands on contraception, they're just not going to get their hands on contraception. And there was a study done in Wisconsin where they interviewed a lot of sexually active teenagers, and they asked them, hey, you know, if you had to talk to your parents and get permission, would you then seek health care? And about half of them said, we're not going to, if we had to talk to our patients, we would seek no reproductive health care, no testing for sexually transmitted diseases, right. no treatment. And about 99% of them said that they would still continue to have sex,
yeah.
even if they didn't talk to their parents. So that's why basically every major medical organization that is relevant, like American Medical Association, American Academy of Pediatrics, American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, American Academy of Family Physicians, they've all said that contraception should be easily accessible to teenagers with an emphasis on LARCs, and that they should not have to get parental consent to get it, because that gives the best outcomes.
What about age? I mean, is that from 13? Is there any limit on when parental permission?
I necessarily don't think so. If a kid is mature enough, then that they're having sex, and I think that they should be able to protect themselves. I think the most important thing, the most important conversation, is that we need to empower parents to feel comfortable talking to their kids about these topics. Because as I was mentioning, kids don't feel comfortable talking to their parents. So when we meet with parents and children, adolescents in our office, it's important to talk about sex, talk to the parents, and educate them on how to talk to their kids about sex and being safe when they're doing it.
There you go. Breaking the ice on the conversation. Not a lot of people talk about it. That's difficult. Mm-hmm. Here you go. All right. Well, thank you very much for the information. And can we post some information on that about LARCs?
Absolutely.
Well?
Yeah. Okay. They have a couple of great websites though that we'll send out.
Okay. Sounds good. Well, thank you very much, Abhishek and Nicholas. We are coming rapidly closing.
Oh, you gotta be kidding me.
No, I know, but we still have a few more minutes. So it is not too late for our listeners to call in and pledge your support for Growing Up in America on KPFT. There's not very many times that you get an opportunity to have 3-4 pediatricians talking about children's health and what we can do, sending out resources just like that. Thank you very much, Dr. Bikini. And several other things. Summer tips. Soon school is going to be starting. What do we need to do to make sure that our kids are prepared for school? And how can we improve the education system? Great programs that Brian is offering. Call in and pledge your support, 713-526-5738.
Well, it's been a really good time talking to y'all today.
And some good news out here at the pledge table as well.
So, yay, give it to us.
Yeah, we want to thank Wayne, who called in a pledge from right here in Houston. We also got some long-distance love from Daniel, who is making a $10 monthly installment on the Fantastic Plastic, and he's doing it from over in Lacassine, Louisiana.
Excellent.
Thanks.
Got some Cajun support.
I'm from Louisiana. Yeah, no, good. Thank you.
Thank you much. Support. Appreciate it, Daniel. Thank you, Wayne. And we took advantage of a little bit of your challenge match, too, Brian. And thank you, Dr. Bikini. Thanks, Mandy. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you very much. And thank you for KPFT. We have about a minute and a half, Brian, to seal the deal.
Seal the deal.
That's right.
Well, I thought this is this whole LARC conversation. I did have one more question just about looking at our Western European or other developed country counterparts. Where are they on this?
So, actually, I'm not 100% sure. I'm not sure if I would guess that they're pretty pro-LARC because the data is amazing, and they anywhere that they made it easily available, including states in the U.S. like Colorado, they've seen teen pregnancy rates and teen abortion rates drop like 50-60%. Colorado did this over the course of a 7-year span where they made LARCs easily widely accessible and low cost. And over from 2009 to 2016, their teen pregnancy dropped 56%. And their teen abortion rate dropped 64%. So it's...
Wow.
Yeah.
There we go. We want to thank you very much, Brian Green from the Houston Food Bank, for joining the show today. You're always a pleasure. Much love. Everyone is so grateful for what you do for our community. And you take time and volunteer to be here at Growing Up in America. Dr. Bikini, thank you.
for everything that you do and come here. Thank you for your support for Growing Up in America and your advocacy. It goes beyond just the doctor's office for sure with you, getting the word out. So thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Until next time, hug your kids, and we'll talk to you next week on Growing Up in America.